Hey, what's up, everyone? The boys of Last Podcast on the left here.
Hello.
Yeah, you?
Want to tell you about our new special. We filmed it in Chicago. It was an unbelievable experience, and you can enjoy it as well. Go to www.lastpodcastlive.com. Don't forget to put the www
in. You gotta get the W's in there.
You do. We're going in the way, way back machine all the way to 2001.
It's a technological glitch that we're trying to get tech support for, but still, just put in the www.lastpodcastlive.com.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Oh, shit! Oh, before we begin, 2019, new year, man.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta warm up. And this is a tale from up north, so I have to do a little bit of a Canadian warm up.
Okay.
Just to slide into this.
Have some poutine, get into it.
That's the poutine noise.
Really?
What you gotta do there? What you gotta do there is,
very good.
Gotta put my runners on to go get a 2-4. Gotta get my runners on to go and get a 2-4.
You know what? You transformed into a Canadian right in front of my ears. Incredible.
My tits went flannel.
I know. I see that. All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben Kissel with Marcus Parks. We also have a very Canadian Henry Zebrowski.
Very loose-throated Canadian. Very loose-throated, letting the sound come out here. Hey, hey. That's Canadian sex noises.
Oh, really? Well, I didn't need to hear that. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
And we want to thank everyone who went out and purchased our live show. It's still available. www.lastpodcastlive.com. Check it out. Thanks for the great response.
This is not just a commercial from 2007, but you must type in the WWW
yes.
in order for the link to work. That is true. It is a tech glitch.
Again, it is still a DIY institution that we have going here.
It is indeed.
All right. So why is Henry Canadian, you may be asking yourself? Well, we are traveling to the great up north. In this episode, we're going to be talking about this guy. He is extremely special as a character, Mark Twitchell.
Mark Twitchell was a psychopathic Canadian cosplayer hack failure who was busted in 2008 for murdering a man named Johnny Altinger and attempting to murder another guy named Gilles Tétrault. Ooh. The only reason why I specifically mentioned that Mark Twitchell was a cosplayer is because that is at the heart of what Twitchell eventually became. Hmm. See, Twitchell was actually pretty talented at cosplaying, although he usually went from the more popular characters like Darth Maul and Wolverine and Bumblebee.
Okay.
Seriously, he did all of the road work of cosplay. It was like he made people call him Logan. That was like his nickname for himself. And you can say, because I don't know much about the inner world of cosplayers,
right.
But I am certain that people have a bit of ire towards the hack cosplayers
who
only do the big names, and it's not like I'm Nino from Captain Tintofor where with his pitchfork and he has like devil wings and like big tits.
Well, I know this as a fact. One of my favorite bartenders and friend of over there at Carmine's Pizza in Brooklyn, he cosplays as Deadshot. And a lot of people say, oh, are you Deadpool? He says, I'm not Deadpool, I'm Deadshot. Deadshot's pretty cool, but they do make fun of the people who are what they would call basic cosplayers.
Damn.
And we're not maligning cosplayers in any way whatsoever, because we know a lot of our listeners do it. And we know that the vast majority of you know that it isn't real. Hmm. You're never actually going to be a Jedi, never going to be a mutant, never going to be a Transformer, but it's still fun to pretend.
Are you sure?
It's not fair.
We were at Comic-Con in San Diego, and I think some people were just dressed, not even up. I think they were just like, now finally, 2 days out of the year, I don't get maligned for dressing like whatever. I don't even know who these people are.
Well, it's just because the more obscure, the better, because then you really know your shit. But I have met people that do cry knowing the knowledge that they were not born with a tail.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's like an emotional thing.
Oh.
Yeah. But Mark Twitchell couldn't ever really accept that he was never going to be any of those things. See, Twitchell was your classic empty mask psychopath, but he still had the creative urge. Mm. But when you got that creative urge, but no empathy or emotion, everything you do is going to be hack and cliche. Mm. So, instead of creating anything that was truly his own, Mark Twitchell just copied what other people did, even beyond cosplaying. From making Star Wars fan films, to directly ripping off the Ricky Gervais HBO show Extras in a terrible feature called Day Players.
Yeah, buddy. He was a filmmaker.
All right. So he's a filmmaker. He's an artist. He's a cosplayer. I don't think we've ever had a serial killer who has these sort of attributes, right?
Ed Gein was very creative. Did we forget?
Well, I mean, honestly, Ed Gein, if the internet was around during Ed Gein's era, his Etsy would be huge.
Very haunted.
But Twitchell's only consequential ripoff was of a show that he became obsessed with only in the year leading up to his attempted and successful respective murders. And this is why Twitchell is famous and why you may know his name. And even though we know Twitchell was going to murder someone, whether he saw this show or not, Twitchell's show was Dexter. Ooh.
Damn you, Dexter!
The only other people who said that are the people who had pilots in contention up against Dexter at Showtime. That's the only people who ever mentioned that show with that much passion.
I do. The thing about Dexter, that was sort of before the true crime wave came. Yeah. I think he was on the, you know, kind of the beginning of it. But the thing that aggravated me was always everyone's like, he kills, but for a reason. I'm like, he's still a serial killer.
We know. That's the thing.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, like, Dexter was a completely fine show with two pretty good seasons about a serial killer who's also a cop who takes out his serial killing urges on criminals who fall through the cracks of the criminal justice system.
And John Lithgow, he had a great run as a villain in the series.
Ooh.
Really scary. Yeah,
yeah, because that was like season four when it kind of got some life back into it, I think. I'm not sure what year John Lithgow was on. I'm looking it up. Dexter. Season four. Yeah, there's that.
So suddenly, with this obsession, Mark Twitchell didn't need to have real adamantium claws or Jedi mind control powers to place himself within a fantasy that he had no part in creating. He could do it by being one of the laziest, least creative things in the world. A killer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Hollywood producer.
No, buddy. He tried to make a movie, and he saw how hard that was. He tried to make two movies, and they got so hard that he decided to flip to becoming something easier, which was a serial killer.
But the thing was, when he decided to do that, he didn't have the courage or the wherewithal to copy Dexter completely. Because, I mean, this guy wasn't going to be hunting down criminals and capturing them. As he did with everything else in his life, he cut corners. And he cut a pretty damn big one on this one. Instead of stalking, catching, and killing criminals like Dexter, Twitchell preyed on lonely single men living in his hometown of Edmonton, Canada, using a fake online dating profile.
So basically he preyed, if he's preying on the lonely men of Edmonton, he's preying on every man in Edmonton, basically, right?
Yes. It's if John from Garfield was real.
Oh, and there was no cats around.
But since Mark Twitchell was an unoriginal idiot who just thinks he's a brilliant mastermind, he got caught on his first murder almost immediately, just 7 days after he did the deed. Mm. And part of the reason why he got caught was because he wrote a full confession on his laptop detailing the entire murder and the disposal of the body, as well as the attempted murder that came before.
I'm going to say that part of the reason why we're doing this episode is because I think that this is maybe the biggest loser we've documented on our entire show.
Yeah. Really?
There's something about this guy that reeks of just no medium talent. That's the word that keeps coming. When Bill Murray screamed and Chevy Chase called him a medium talent, and that's how they got into a fist fight. This is what he reminds me of. And he wrote a 42-page long script detailing every part of each one of his crimes that is not only hacky as fuck, not only is it just a terrible written thing, because it sounds like it's like discovering somebody's live journal.
Ooh.
If you're from our generation, do you remember how, like, our generation, a lot of people had live journals?
Yeah.
And a part of it was that you did want people to see your innermost thoughts.
Yeah.
but not really. Like, you kind of was like, my thoughts are out there, but you didn't really want anybody to see them because if they do read them, they are highly fucking embarrassing.
Right. Yeah.
This document called the SK Confessions, serial killer confessions, called the SK Confessions, was like a serial killer's live journal. It may as well have had like weeaboo pictures in it, like little anime things in it being like, oh, too real for me, like all that kind of bullshit. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it could have been a good Tumblr.
Yeah.
A good Tumblr page.
I mean, this is live journal through and through because you got to remember all this happened in like 2008.
We're pretty current with this story
here. Fairly current with this story, but it was long enough ago where the internet was just starting to become available to regular people.
And people still thought it was mildly private.
Yes.
All right. Just quick question. Douchebags, we've covered a lot of them. Biggest ones. We got Twitchell, Elliot Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Who's worse, yes. Elliot Rodgers or Twitchell? Ooh. Quick nerd, true crime nerdy question.
I'm going to say Roger. Yeah, I'm
Elliot Rodger?
I'm going to say Elliot Rodger, yeah.
I'd say yes. He is obviously a much more even dangerous piece of shit simply because he killed more people.
Right.
Where the reason why I end up putting Mark Twitchell in more of the bigger loser categories because he couldn't even do the killing part. Right.
Okay. All right. It's settled.
And I think the other thing about Twitchell is that like he did have some talent to him.
Okay.
But he had just a little bit, but the problem was that he was a complete and total psychopath.
Right.
And
I'm beginning to think we shouldn't trust people who write screenplays. That seems to be the problem.
Well, Henry, would you like to read the introduction to SK Confessions?
Yes, and now for the inner voice of Mark Twitchell. I don't remember the exact place and time it was that I decided to become a serial killer, but I remember the sensation that hit me when I committed to the decision. It was a rush of pure euphoria.
Euphoria.
I felt lighter, less stressed, if you will, at the freedom of the prospect. There was something about urgently exploring my dark side that greatly appealed to me, and I'm such a methodical planner and thinker. The very challenge itself was enticing to behold. This realization was just the last in a series of new discoveries I made about myself.
This dude, it is Elliot Rodger meets BTK. This is a perfect douchebag burrito.
But just to see how a failed filmmaker became an almost double murderer, let's get into the story of Mark Twitchell, using as our main source The Devil's Cinema by Steve Lillebuen, which is a well-researched and well-written account of the whole story. Comes recommended.
Okay.
So Mark Twitchell was born in Edmonton, Canada on July 4th, 1979.
Oh. Stealing our day.
Stealing our day indeed.
Now, as per Lillebuen's account of Edmonton, it sounds like a fairly awful place to live. In fact, it's commonly known in Canada as Deadmonton.
Yes. That's also like they lived in a place called, I think it was like Wills Nor, and they called it Kills More. Like, all right, we like the verbal puns.
See, Edmonton is an oil town, and as we know, oil towns are almost always rife with crime due to the fact that there's a lot of people with a lot of money and not a whole lot of good ideas on how to spend it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's also got something to do with the fact that oil is slippery?
Could be, yeah.
Now, around the time of the murder of Johnny Altinger, Edmonton was actually the most violent city in Canada, with 39 murders marking the year 2005.
Oh, my 39 murders. By American standards.
For them it is. Well, for them it's quite a bit.
Peaceful city in America.
Well, I mean, that's still in a town of 700,000. So 39 murders, that's going to get noticed.
39 murders. Come
their people
in Des Moines on a Sunday.
Kissel, their people are bigger. So it's like it's 78 murders.
And you know, we don't have a lot to brag about, but I'm just going to say we have more murders than that.
We do.
In Poughkeepsie.
Actually, in the book, the author did say, like, now I know that doesn't sound like a whole lot to you Americans. Well, we here in Canada, that's a lot.
Good Lord.
Now, another reason why it's called Deadmonton is that it's pretty much the furthest north you can go in Canada before you start hitting the wastelands. Now, there certainly are towns past Edmonton, but there are places like Grimshaw, Paddle Prairie,
and Grumbler.
And I'll tell you what, Grumbler is famous for being overrun with moose burglars. They're like cat burglars, but they're just big fat guys with Molson's jerseys on, just stuck in basement windows.
Oh, no. It sounds like the Undertaker named all these towns. What is happening?
But really, Twitchell, I mean, he could have been from pretty much anywhere in North America. I mean, from the outside, he seemed like just a run-of-the-mill suburban nerd who was super into video games, comic books, Star Wars, and cosplaying. Mm. But on the inside, Twitchell was a born psychopath. He had no trauma in his childhood to speak of, and he came from a loving home, with his parents even going so far as to pay to have his freakishly protruding ears pinned back when he was a kid.
Oh, come on.
You know, kids should always be treated like a Weimaraner.
Yeah.
Can you just pin the ears back? What do you do to that?
I don't know how that works. So he's into cosplay, video games, comics. So basically the name of his book is How Not to Meet a Woman.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Well,
that's great.
Nowadays, that shit done change.
No.
That's
because
true.
Because Comic-Con's where you go to meet a cool woman. Back in the day, though, they didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's and it did make true. You isolated.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm not making fun of no Comic-Conners in this house. We love our Comic-Con people here.
Well, Twitchell grew up to be pretty much just like a normal-looking, average white guy, not fat, not skinny, maybe a little piggish in the face.
You know what he's got that I don't like? He's got big legs. He's got big thighs.
Oh, okay.
There's something about dudes who got the wrestling bottom half, you know what I mean, with the big butt attached to big legs. I don't trust them.
No, you can't. Great for cow tipping, though.
But internally, Twitchell had one of the actual medical tells of a psychopath. Mark Twitchell was born without a sense of smell.
Whoa.
And while not everyone with a poor sense of smell is a psychopath, a 2011 study found that many psychopaths are afflicted with this condition.
Really?
Oh.
They think it's because psychopaths tend to have less frontal lobe activity, frontal lobe being the area of the brain that's associated with impulse control and acting within society's norms.
Hmm.
And that's also where the sense of smell is located.
Interesting. Whoa. Of course, frontal lobe, the sister of Lisa Loeb, a fantastic
that is
singer.
Funny.
Thank you.
That is funny.
2019. Kissel. Thank you.
It is really good. You really re-upped with the jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think he becomes like Daredevil?
Or since he doesn't have a sense of smell, everything else is heightened?
He can feel the future.
Yeah, could be.
But Twitchell had other psychopathic tendencies besides just the smell thing. He was a pathological liar, he stole money from his mother, and he was arrested twice for shoplifting from grocery stores.
Well, you know.
But Mark Twitchell considered himself to be a genius.
Ugh.
I think this is where the psychopath shit starts coming on. He had definitely a superiority complex as a very little kid.
Yeah.
But the pathological lying is something, because I'm not going to say I was as a boy, but I told a lot of stories. And sometimes it's what leads you to be a storyteller. Technically, up until this point, he's just getting all the tool sets he needs to be a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. No, you also wanted to be a priest. So you had a lot of problems as a child.
I was too horny.
Yeah, that was it. So he stole from grocery stores.
Yeah, he's shoplifting from grocery stores.
But what do you shoplift from a grocery store? A pineapple?
What are you talking about,
cereal?
Kissel?
What do you steal?
You never did that?
No, not from a grocery store.
Yeah,
you steal from from Hot Topic. You steal from cool places. You get a shirt. You get a belt thing.
No. When I was my poorest, I used to get a grocery cart and drive around. You get a couple of dry goods. You eat them as you go. And then you leave them back in the cart. And then sometimes if you're a big fat kid, your parents are being like, "No, we're not getting you another Mars bar, Mark." And you're like, "Well, mother, we'll see what my fingers do." And it was like, you could see him getting a Mars bar and be like, "Another deed, another dollar." And he opens it up and like smears chocolate over his face like he's eating a log of shit.
All right, all right. I don't know where you hid all the stuff in your man purse, perhaps.
Oh, and Twitchell had a new idea. He attributed it to what he called his internal creative genius.
Oh, God.
Which is a term he used so often, he abbreviated it to ICG.
Always with the fucking acronyms.
Yeah. But of course, ICG was always just a spin on someone else's idea.
Hmm.
The biggest well being, without a doubt, Star Wars.
Okay.
And in particular, despite being adult when they came out, because I can get this if you were a kid when these movies came out.
Right.
Mark Twitchell was obsessed with the prequels.
Oh, no.
He went and saw each one in the theaters, all three of them,
Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones.
Uh-oh.
Revenge of the Sith. Was it Revenge of the Sith? That was the third one?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was Revolt of the Sarths. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
He went at least half a dozen times.
I think the last one was Sith. You're being mean to me.
You're being mean to me.
You know, people at Comic-Con are very nice. The only time they will ever get violent and everyone will kick your ass, if you dress as Jar Jar Binks, you will get pummeled like a gang beaten.
But he viewed Jar Jar Binks as like a role model.
Wow.
He loved the prequels. He would talk about, like, he said that he would go and cry in the prequels, being like, this is the story George Lucas was meant to tell. This is the story of humankind.
Yeah.
That, to me, is marker number one.
Yeah. Those are the stories that... Those stories happened because George Lucas got divorced to the woman who really came up with a lot of the Star Wars ideas, and then she didn't help him on the prequels, and that's what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, his biggest care, his biggest love out of all the characters in the prequels, Mark Twitchell, loved Anakin Skywalker. By far the worst character in all of the prequels.
Mannequin Anakin.
Yeah, Mannequin Anakin.
Yeah, Mannequin Anakin.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark, he'd even go on theforce.net, which was like, actually, full disclosure, force.net, pretty sweet ass Star Wars message board. I used to go on it all the time when I was a kid. I loved it.
Absolutely.
And he'd post about how awesome he thought it was when Anakin killed all those kids. He'd be like, can you imagine how much strength it took to do that? Could you even imagine? And he'd do it using goofy little screen names like Achilles of Edmonton, Grinning Fisto, or Psycho Jedi.
Psycho Jedi, man. That's the one that makes me... It just sends a shiver up my spine just imagining the manager at Hot Topic that also calls himself Psycho Jedi.
Yes, they all sound like rejected wrestling names. Like when Stone Cold was talking about how they wanted to give him the name Mr. McFreeze, and he's like, who comes up with this shit?
I don't know. I can see myself cheering for Achilles of Edmonton.
Yeah, that's actually kind of classy. Yeah, I could. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I could see myself buying shoes from a place called Achilles of Edmonton.
Yeah, Twitch was so into Star Wars, he even got a vanity license plate that just said DRK Jedi, Dark Jedi.
He meant for it to say Dark Jedi, but you know what it stands for? Dork Jedi.
Oh, I like that.
But the thing that got Twitch going most was actually making movies. Movies being a term that I use very loosely here.
Okay.
Starting from a young age, Twitchell and a couple of friends worked on a project that they called The Video. Videos, mostly just parodies. Actually, one of his ideas I kind of like, he did a Judge Dredd parody called Judge Fred, and it featured Fred Flintstone as Judge Dredd.
Honestly.
So you mean to tell me he was... Mad TV. At the same time of Mad TV, and I'm pretty certain that he may have stolen that from Mad TV, because it was on TV at the time.
No, that is singly, that's the single greatest idea I've ever heard.
And also, Judge Fred. What's fucked up is that the mask he created for Judge Fred is eerily similar to the mask he uses to kill his victim a couple of years later.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And you know, speaking of which, like, Mark made all of his own costumes. He actually made a Darth Maul costume for the Phantom Menace premiere. And you know what? B+.
Okay.
Solid B+ on this costume.
He put a lot of work into his costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, his aunt taught him how to do it.
If you look at all, it's a lot of detail. He spent a lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
Again, if he had just kept to it, you could have ended up working in the special effects world. You could end up working in the costume world, especially now that there's a big bump in film production in Canada.
And fan-made films, of course, those are real popular.
Yeah.
The thing with cosplay is every time a cartoonist draws your favorite character a little differently, you've got to upgrade. Because I was talking to my friend about it who plays Deadshot. Deadshot came out with a new comic.
Ah.
He's got a bunch of new trinkets.
Ah.
He's got to upgrade.
Shit.
So it's not easy.
But, of course, the allure of the internet always drew Mark Twitchell back, especially in the early days. See, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the internet was a much different place than it is today.
Hmm.
These days, everyone's got the internet. But back in the year 2000, it was mostly populated by people like me, Henry, Mark Twitchell, and his first wife, Megan Castarala, who was nothing more than just a sweet, naive girl from Colorado Springs.
Oh.
Yeah.
The two of them met in one of the internet's many chat rooms and soon began an internet romance. Emails turned to calls, and eventually Mark Twitchell impulsively asked her to marry him over the phone. Classic psychopath move.
Well, that is so romantic.
Well, it's just very, they didn't ever meet each other, and then he asked her to marry her, and then that poor woman was just like, yeah, like, she's such a sweet lady. If you see the interview with her, she's so nice. And then he just, like, shows up like, I'm a Mac Daddy from Canada who's about to lay that dick down so deep your whole life's going to be shattered. And then it turned out that dick didn't go that deep.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she said yes. She boarded a flight to Canada 2 months later and married Mark Twitchell on January 4th, 2001. And she had only been married to this near stranger for 3 days when Mark asked her a question. As they were laying in bed one day, Mark asked her, without prompting, if she ever thought about killing a person. And Megan later said that she was suddenly very aware that she was in a strange country sitting in a bed with a man she barely knew. Hmm. So she said, sure, but she'd never actually do it. But Mark immediately said that he'd very much thought about killing someone and had thought about finding a homeless person and just killing him because no one would ever miss him. Just to see what killing a guy felt like.
That's interesting. You know, that's one of those questions, if you're in a relationship, you know it's not really directed towards you. They want to tell you. It's like if you're in a relationship and one of the partners is like, have you ever thought about having a threesome? You know, and then in reality, you're like, no, I would never. And then they're like, oh, yeah, me neither. You know,
now, this was in 2001. This was 7 years before the murder of Johnny Altinger. And this guy, you know, Mark Twitchell, he was going to murder someone no matter what. Mm. But Megan, she tried sticking it out. And eventually, Mark Twitchell moved with her to America and got a job as an appliance salesman, which he was actually very good at. He was he was a great salesman.
Okay.
A lot of psychopaths are. But Mark still spent most of his time on the internet. In fact, Megan would sometimes catch him online pretending to be a woman, because Mark thought it was fun. It was actually one of his hobbies.
Yeah, see, if it becomes your hobby, that's when it's a big enough that's a red flag.
So the two lived together in Peoria, Illinois for 4 years, but the marriage fell apart one weekend when Mark left Megan at home and went to cosplayer's paradise. Dragon Con.
Ooh.
I tell you what, man, and to this day, Dragon Con is where you go to get freaky with some nerds.
Yeah.
That is just wall-to-wall Spider-Man butter up in that fucking house, dude.
Well, it sounds like a great time.
Yeah, Dragon Con's awesome. I went a year before, me and Carolina went like a year before last, I think.
Really?
It was fucking great. Yeah, it's down in Atlanta. It's an awesome little Comic-Con, and it's where cosplayers go to show off. So okay. You, like, see the best cosplaying at Dragon Con.
Cool.
And what happens at Dragon Con comes back with you in a bag. It's rough. I mean, it's merch.
It's a lot of merch. Yeah. A lot of merch.
And, Margaret, I bought my ocarina there.
No kidding, Marcus.
Whoa. What?
I don't know what the hell that sentence meant, but thank you for sharing.
And Mark Twitchell, like so many others before and after, cheated on his wife that weekend in Atlanta.
With a dragon? Why is your cock all burned? I got a blowjob from a dragon.
Honestly, that's half the stories of Dragon Con, because you know the dragon's got big old titties. That's why you're doing it.
And as soon as Mark Twitchell got back, he told his wife what he'd done without an ounce of guilt, and she divorced him soon after.
See, okay. at least you fucking got a clean slate to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And that's not the only run-in that Mark Twitchell had at a Comic-Con. While searching for various things on a place called DocumentingReality.com, I found a man who only goes by the name of Ricky, who talks about an encounter that he had with Mark Twitchell at a Comic-Con.
Hmm.
This piece of shit tried to befriend me because I was carrying around 2 lightsabers from New Year's Edmonton. I saw his license plate saying Dark Jedi, and I knew he was going to be a bad apple, like a guy on a Harley. He made a point to grab the same Spider-Man stickers I was grabbing at the dollar store in City Center Mall. I ignored him and went my way because I don't need stalkers. He followed me home, and I hoped you wouldn't come inside so I could get him on video cameras. I don't like stalkers.
cockers. Then after a while, he just dropped me and disappeared. I kept looking over my shoulder for this filth. Later, I read how he wanted to leave the Spider-Man plastic bag so as to frame someone. And that someone being me, Ricky.
Oh, my. Two lightsabers. Ricky is a pretty cool cat.
Oh, and Spider-Man stickers, you say that's what they were fighting over?
Yep.
You know what was on what was on Mark Twitchell's laptop?
What?
Spider-Man stickers.
Seriously? Whoa. This is crazy.
But Twitchell, his 4 years in America were not totally wasted. When he returned to Edmonton, he had an idea for a movie. Now, I couldn't find anything about the actual plot, but as soon as Twitchell got back, he started working on a feature-length fan film called Star Wars: Secrets of the Rebellion.
Ooh,
now,
okay.
As lame as it sounds, when you look at the footage of it, there's some footage of it in the various documentaries about Mark Twitchell, you see that they actually had some pretty good high-quality costumes in that.
Great
and
costumes.
They had a full-on right. green screen studio. He was really hustling on that
yeah,
horrible movie.
The thing with fan films is you're not legally allowed to make any money off of them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they lay the Thor's hammer down
yeah.
on you. So I don't really...
Mjolnir.
Yep. You want to be careful. Yeah.
And we're saying, you know, we're not saying there's anything wrong with fan films or cosplaying or anything like that. And to give credit to Twitchell, I mean, he spent 2 years on this, and he spent $60,000 of his own money on this, and he even created his own company to do this whole thing.
What
it
was
called Express Entertainment. That's X. P-R-E-S-S.
Why do you have a black couch in the waiting room? Well, that's where we do a lot of filming as well. We rent that out to a
this
company.
This is, it's more of an audition place where girls that seem to arrive here from Wichita or even as far as Magunka, Kansas. There may be 18 and new to the film industry, and I just want to make sure that they get off on the right foot.
Yeah, Twitchell, I mean, he even got the guy who played Boba Fett to do a cameo.
Hey!
Got Jeremy Bullock in there.
Now, why do you... Hold on a second. Do you need the guy who did Boba Fett? Isn't he covered the entire time?
Can anyone
just do that?
This is a good point. This is a good point, and that will come back around again and again in every remake, being like, we don't need the real original Jason.
Are you 5'10"? You got the job.
But I will say, in order to even get Boba Fett to do the movie, he had to give Boba Fett final cut. He had to actually, and he's just doing a cameo, but Boba Fett still had to watch the entire thing and approve the final cut.
But still, you know, it seemed like it was all going to work out. The Canadian Broadcasting Company, the CBC, they came out, they did a little feature on the shoot.
Oh, they also do a feature called Favorite Duck of the Month, so I wouldn't give him a lot of credit.
I would watch that feature every month.
And pretty soon, you know, Mark Twitchell, he was married for a second time to a woman he met on plentyoffish.com.
Oh.
Although, it was pretty much, I mean, it was the same thing as the time before. He met her 3 months in, I think. He, you know, asked for her hand in marriage. They got married, and then a couple months after that, she was pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
Locked in.
Plenty of fish indeed.
Just squirty squirty. He had plenty of fish in his balls, I guess.
I guess so.
Now she's got one big old fish in her gut.
Yep, she's got a big grouper in there.
Oh,
yikes.
Man, I'll tell you what, plentyoffish.com does not look good anymore.
I went on that website because I was hungry, and they didn't even
What
food.
Is this? Come on, Kizzle.
I had to search plentyoffish.com next.
2019.
You don't want to see that. 2019. Plenty of shrimp.
Yes.
Don't go there, my
yes.
friend. It ain't about shrimp, if you know what I'm talking about.
God, man, it's just for tiny dicks.
What's this whole Danzig page about?
And things, they just kept rolling for Mark. On Halloween 2007, he won Best Costume with a Transformers Bumblebee suit.
Ooh.
At Edmonton's biggest Halloween party, The Howler.
You know what, man? Bumblebee has a new movie coming out. The Spider-Verse is supposed to be the best Spider-Man film. This dipshit would have loved the future.
Yeah, he would have.
He just fucked up so bad, he doesn't get to enjoy any of the nerd shit that he likes.
None of it.
Yeah, now he just gets to be just mercilessly beat up in jail for liking this.
And he didn't just win the Howler Halloween costume contest. He won another contest the next day at a nightclub at the West Edmonton Mall.
Whoa, nightclub at the mall. Cool.
Hey, but, I mean, before you judge, it's the biggest mall in North America, all right?
Wait.
No, Mall of America is.
Nope, the West Edmonton. I looked it up. The West Edmonton Mall actually beats it.
Does it have a frickin' Dick's Last Resort? Does it have a Hooters?
Does Mall of America have a nightclub?
Oh, you can dance anywhere.
Well, anything can turn into a nightclub if you're there at night and you're drinking.
Exactly.
But despite all of this, 1 year exactly after that night at the West Edmonton Mall, Mark Twitchell would be under arrest for first-degree murder. Mm. So what happened? Well, there's a couple of factors at work here. In the fall of 2007, everything just kind of stalled in Mark Twitchell's life. Shooting on Secrets of the Rebellion had ended that summer, but the whole thing had been done on a green screen. So he needed a huge team of special effects people to finish it for him, because he had no idea how to do 3D rendering.
But that's tough to do, to be fair.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I don't know how to do it. And whoever volunteered, this is the only catch, they were going to have to do all of this work completely for free.
Woohoo!
Yep. Now, you got to, as a young, struggling filmmaker, because I know we have people like that who listen to the show, and I try to make a movie back in the day. We've tried to make projects before.
Oh, yeah.
But when on your own dime, it's really, really difficult. And a part of it is that Mark Twitchell just thought that he was such a genius and that people were attracted to him so much, is that it wasn't just that he was out of money. It was the way that he sold Secrets of the Rebellion to the people that he attracted, like the PAs that he became like kind of his little go-boys for free, that he kind of wore out their welcome with them. He then kind of pushed this movie onto a guy that's like, you have an idea how difficult it is to find somebody just to edit a 7-minute sketch
for free? Yeah.
Never mind, an hour and a half of digital rendering, where it was all digital rendering. If you see the stills, he didn't have sets.
No.
They were all just standing on green screens. 40% of the movie was supposed to be digital rendering. And
then
he expected it all to be done for free, and he kind of acted as if it was a foregone conclusion. That all of these people are going to jump to my aid because I'm a genius, because I've already continued this lie. Because when he got CBC to come look at his bullshit and do the little bit on him, he was like, you see, I'm going someplace now. And in the next movie, all of this is going to do is just build up for my next movie where I'm going to get some real Hollywood actors. And he's spinning this lie, hoping it's going to turn into a truth. And it doesn't.
Right, no. Right. And for the artists out there, we worked for free for 5 years doing the pods. So if you do, if you have a vision and you want to work for free, you got to do it.
Yeah.
But this is
you have to work for free. You have to bust out that vision for free because there's going to be nobody there to help you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, like Mark Twitchell, like, he didn't even know how to be a filmmaker, because the guy who played Han Solo in the movie, who was like an actual working actor that Mark hired, he was like, this guy has no fucking clue what he's doing.
Yeah, they said he was really into the gadgets and the costumes.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand. He built really ornate costumes, and he spent all of his fucking money on these killer cameras.
Right.
But he had no clue what the fuck he was doing otherwise, and then acted as if he did. Which is common. You gotta fake it till you make it, but at some point it catches up to you.
I'm just sad we didn't get to see a second film, Jar Jar Binks in the Ears of Truth. Because I think that would have been great.
And it's him lobbying the White House to lift the ban on the communists in the 50s. I think that's a good way to position him into a new time period.
Absolutely.
Now, it is idiotic to blame a television show for inspiring a murder, because we all know that people like Mark Twitchell are eventually going to kill someone no matter what media they consume.
Yeah, they'll find a way or a reason.
Yeah, they'll always, always find a reason. But in 2007, just as everything was stalling with the Star Wars project, and just as the glow from the Night of the Bumblebee had faded, Mark Twitchell was introduced by a friend to Dexter. And Twitchell ate that shit up. Watched the whole season in 4 days.
Get it.
And then there was a bright spot. See, even though the Star Wars project had stalled, Twitchell still had another project. Day Players.
Ooh.
Now, Day Players, I mean, it's pretty much just extras, and that it's about extras in the film industry, but with Canadians.
Right, right.
We actually have a short clip of the god-awful trailer that was uploaded by and co-starred Mark Twitchell about 10 years ago. And we're going to play this in its entirety on our Adult Swim stream on Tuesday.
All right, we're excited to be back every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, adultswim.com/stream.
Nice plug, Kissel, with the plug.
Plugging it.
All right.
What's Amy up to lately?
I don't know. I was going to ask you the same question.
Why would I know what Amy was up to at all?
Weird. She told me what you were up to.
I can't remember. I don't know why she would know that. I can't remember the last time I saw Amy. It was definitely not last night.
You didn't see her last night?
No.
Not at your apartment?
Well, I mean, you know what? Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, you know what? Oh. Yeah, okay.
Amy is my girl.
You broke up with her, jackass.
So? That doesn't give you the right to...
Guys, can you keep it down back there? We're trying to keep the audio clean for the take. I don't want to have to do this 16 times. Sorry.
Blow my fucking brains out.
Sorry. Also, whenever you go to L.A., go down to a bar, not a nice one, just go to a normal L.A. bar, and you'll hear extras talking because it's a full profession.
Yeah.
And they are really upset. I heard three white dudes talking because now they do inclusion writers. Mm-hmm. So there have to be more diverse people in the background as extras. They are not happy. And a conversation between professional extras who are out of work is one of the most fascinating things you could ever eavesdrop on.
BG artists, they know more about union rules than any other human beings I've ever met in the face of the planet. They know the hours breaks down. They know what you get for bumps, depending on if you bring certain clothes. You get a bump. That's a big thing, too, is that if you have very specific clothing choices, like if you have a cop's uniform, which is... I don't know how they get this shit out the time. They walk in with a full-on cop's fucking costume on, being like, they get a bump for it. And right. I was like, what else do you do? And he's like, yeah, sometimes you can just pretend to be a cop. And you're like, that's a crime. You shouldn't be doing that.
They know when the lunch is served, the best time to go, get in line.
But yeah, that was the whole premise of the movie, is that there was, and it was just a, like, there was a scene that was quote-unquote crazy athletic sex that was super loud.
Well, that's what a part of it, that's where that day players got really weird, was that they said that day players started featuring a lot of sexual content, which is, at the time, it's strange, right? Because at this point, he's hovering in sort of like a Tommy Wiseau
right.
kind of world, because Tommy Wiseau tried to follow up the room with a comedy, because he tried to embrace the people that were laughing at the room and saying, oh yeah, it was always a comedy. So he made an office comedy that was fucking hot garbage, but he's kind of doing the same thing, but like Tommy Wiseau, who liked seeing his ass move in sex positions.
Oh, yeah.
He liked seeing his weird ripply back and all that kind of shit, like force fuck a woman. He put a lot of dark sexuality into day players that turned a lot of people off. They were like, why is it like this? Why is there all this like weird choking shit in this? And it's also not just entertaining to watch two Canadian improv comedians with just cameras on them. Like, that doesn't work. Like, they need a script.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah. But as bad as that is, Twitchell still took the movie in front of a bunch of investors named Venture Alberta.
Oh.
Yeah, Venture Alberta. They're just a group. It was like Canadian Shark Tank. They were like a group of investors who heard proposals each year from aspiring Albertans. And Twitchell gave one hell of a sales pitch to these guys. He had fake numbers, told these guys, give me one small investment, $1.5 million, first round. It's all it'll take.
Okay.
I'm going to turn that into a 10-picture, 5-year run. It's going to make you $33.9 million.
That's a lot
that's
of
a big,
money. That's
a big
number.
Well, the problem is that what I know from Shark Tank,
mm-hmm.
is that when you go through the maths of what your company is going to be, you have to really figure out what it is for real.
Oh, yeah.
Because if not, I'll tell you what, them sharks, they put skewers in you.
Oh, yeah, they will. You give yourself a $5 million evaluation, you've only sold $100,000 in a full year because you're selling socks for cats. they're going to chew you up.
Yeah. But Twitchell, he had an ace up his sleeve, and he waited to the very end of his presentation to reveal it. He had two words for these guys. Alec Baldwin.
Oh,
yeah. Can't go wrong.
You know who else was going to be in the movie?
Who?
Kevin Smith.
Oh,
Justin Timberlake, Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my God!
All of them
shit.
Were signed on to make cameos in Day Players.
The cast that makes zero sense. That's amazing.
Now, most people of Venture Alberta passed, but one guy, John Pinsent, actually signed on to buy a share in the movie and promised an investment of $35,000.
Huh. Honestly, that's $35,000 of free-ass money that he just got by lying. Mm-hmm. That's called show business.
Showbiz. Okay.
Yeah, and Twitchell also convinced his buddy's parents to give him another $30,000, while his wife's brother gave over all the money he made working in the oil fields, which was another $30,000.
Wow. Just covered in pen ink, like in, you remember in Ernest Goes to Jail?
Oh,
when
yeah.
he breaks the pen.
Oh.
And he's got the tissue he's eating. I will say the wife's brother gave him his money in the most Canadian way possible, where he's like, all right, I'll give you this money, but you're going to write in a document that is written down that this money is to be held in trust so that it has to be used for the movie and nothing else.
Right.
And Mark is like, absolutely, there's no way for me to spend this money if it's put in trust. I want it in trust, and I want it in a bank note. And so they signed a piece of paper, and it's just like, you fucking rube.
But even though 90 grand is a good chunk of money, it's not anywhere near good enough to deliver on Mark Twitchell's promises.
Because remember, Baldwin, Justin Timberlake. Good Lord.
Yeah. And since he was spending all his time on Day Players, he got fired from his day job.
Oh, the real Day Players.
Yeah.
That's sad. What was his day job?
Salesman.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
But this is when shit started. This is when it starts getting dark.
Yeah.
Right? Because what we're going to see is that the bottom has fallen under on this moment of his filmmaking career. And at any point, as creators, I've had the rug pulled out from underneath me several times. And you know what then has to happen is you have to just rebuild. You just go back to doing it because you're a filmmaker. And you just kind of figure out what the fuck it is that you're doing if you can. This guy went to a worse place.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So after he lost his job, he did what any good psychopath would do. Kept it a secret from his wife. And just kept leaving the house every day for about 8 hours pretending to go to work.
It's so much more difficult than just finding a job.
Isn't it, though?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Then out came the Facebook. See, back.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. See, back in 2008, Facebook statuses were all done in the third person. Like, Marcus is going to the bank. Marcus just had a tasty burrito.
Right.
And so on and so forth.
It was psychotic.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Also, really unhealthy, Marcus. Really unhealthy. Eat some vegetables.
Stop going to the bank, Marcus. What are you doing at the bank? Are you casing the bank?
But starting around August, Mark Twitchell started posting shit like this.
Mark has way too much in common with Dexter Morgan.
Ugh.
Then he started his own Facebook profile as Dexter Morgan.
Douchebag! Here we are. It's time to play the game Douchebag. Who's the first contestant?
And he actually got a group of other Dexter fans to start responding to his Dexter Morgan Facebook statuses.
Yeah. It became like a big fantasy thing.
Right.
People would act like Dexter Morgan was real, and then he would message them back as Dexter Morgan. All of this is the shit that you see people do. Like, when you wonder, like, what people are doing on their laptops at Starbucks at 3
right.
p.m. on a Tuesday, you're like, what are their jobs? They're doing this.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so I can see this. This is a social media extension of cosplay.
Yeah.
You know, it's more obviously psychological.
It very much makes sense. But he started messaging some of these people personally as himself. The one he messaged the most was a woman named Renee. He told her this in one message, quote,
"You're not the only one to relate to Dexter. It sometimes scares me how much I can relate."
But this role play wasn't enough. Twitchell needed to take it to the next level. And so, on August 27th, 2008, Mark Twitchell sent out a casting call for a new project born from his internal creative genius called House of Cards.
Ooh.
Now, not surprisingly, House of Cards, it's about a cop turned serial killer, just like Dexter.
And he lives in a house of cards?
It's very hard to live in a house of cards.
Yeah.
You have to stand so still.
One mistake, the whole thing goes down.
Yeah, he called it a psychological thriller.
Ooh.
But Mark's little twist was that this killer wasn't killing criminals. He was luring cheating husbands off the internet and killing them.
Oh.
So the plot is pretty much married guy shows up for a date at a garage, but he's immediately knocked out by a stun gun. And when he wakes up, he's taped to a chair, and there's this crazy psycho guy standing in front of him doing that, like, that weird head tilt thing that nu metal guitarist used to always do to try to look crazy. You remember that?
Yeah.
From all those? Yeah, they
always did the
head tilt thing where they look like birds.
I remember. So this is hostile, basically.
Yeah, it's hot. Yeah, it's pretty much it. And he's also, to rip another thing off, he's wearing a hockey mask with the mouth and the chin cut out, painted black with gold stripes.
Okay.
I don't understand the black with gold stripes choice. He did that with the judge. It started with Judge Fred.
Yeah.
And then it turned into this.
You know what that is? That's the colors of Bumblebee.
Oh, yeah.
What a fucking hat.
He loves it. Got a little Bumblebee in it.
Well, here's an example of the dialogue from the movie. This is actual dialogue from the movie written by Mark Twitchell.
All right, just before we do this, I'll take the part of the person who was being tortured.
Okay. Settle down, Roger. You have nothing to worry about yet. If you play by the rules, then you will live. If you don't, I'm gonna cut you up into tiny pieces and they'll never find the body. I'm gonna ask you a series of questions. And how you answer those questions, Roger, is going to decide your fate. Roger?
Are you supposed to be Jigsaw?
Okay. Okay, Roger, settle down.
Well, it sounds a lot like...
I'm going to check your answers while you're sitting here. And if I find out you lied to me or on any particular point, I'm gonna cut your nutsack off and show it to you. Do you read me, mister?
I hear you, man. That's
actually a line. I'm gonna cut your nutsack off and show it to you. Do you read me?
I like it.
So the killer, he asks some questions, he gets his ATM info, and then he kills the guy.
Okay.
Now, the original draft of the script had the killer decapitating the guy with the samurai sword, but Twitchell's wife, who couldn't stand violence, she wouldn't let him do it.
Really?
Not gonna do it, Mark.
Not gonna do it.
Not gonna
You're
do it.
You're not doing... Mark, what kind of nastiness is this? You're going to have his head chopped off by a samurai sword? Yes, my dear. Can't you see that is the only way for the film to end? Because if not, what is this purchase of this $300 samurai sword for?
Right. So this seems it's a pretty one-dimensional film here. We got Hostel, we got Jigsaw,
we got
Bumblebee.
It's extremely... Well, but that's the thing, though, is that there's a twist.
What's the twist?
Well, see, first of all, they compromised. Doesn't get decapitated. He just gets stabbed, but still with a samurai sword.
Okay.
Got to. He already spent the money that is held in trust for the other film.
Yes.
On that samurai.
I mean, is the twist that the guy actually has steel balls and he can't chop them off?
Whoa.
That'd be pretty cool.
All right, so after the killer dismembers the body and loads the parts into his car, here's what happens.
Okay.
I'm going to read stage directions, and Ben, I'm going to need you to play the part.
Okay, sure. Do I have to look at the script?
Yeah, I'm going to need you to play the part of the wife.
The wife.
Interior home. Library. Day. A writer leans back from staring intensely at his laptop screen and puts his hands behind his head, taking a deep sigh in relief that he's just finished something solid. He closes Microsoft Word and a website showing the inside workings of a female profile on a cheater's dating site is the last thing to shut down.
Whoa.
He closes the laptop and the shell displays superhero stickers on it in a distinctive pattern. He puts it into his carrying case and leans over to close a duffel bag containing gloves, a stun gun, and a black, mouthless hockey mask with yellow streaks on it. He moves to his living room and kisses his wife goodbye.
Okay, I'm the wife.
Yes.
Okay, off to the gym, honey?
You bet. Gotta relieve some tension from sitting so long.
Well, how's the story coming along?
Really well, sweetie, my huge, big-titted wife.
Oh, yeah.
It's true when they say the best way to succeed is to write what you know.
Do you get it?
I don't get it. Is he off to the gym? As the wife, I am still... Is he going to the gym?
No, remember, he's writing the script because, see, the whole thing is that the movie was the script that the guy was writing. Because, see, the movie was a movie within the movie.
Why?
Yeah, but the guy is really a killer. He's really a killer.
He's really the killer.
Why would you take a stun gun to the gym?
Because...
What is going on?
He's lying to his wife.
He's lying to his wife? He's lying to me?
Yeah, man, he's
okay,
a bad guy.
That's the last lie he's ever going to tell.
Yeah, man, he's lying. Yeah, especially to you as his wife, he'll just fucking snap his neck.
Absolutely.
Just fucking use your huge... I can't imagine how big your pussy would be if you were a woman. And you go up there and you just fucking choke him to death.
Absolutely.
But again, he then really did all this, which is then... I don't know how to put it in my mind as, like, I know it's sick and technically dark, but it's also the lamest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this shoot just sounds like the saddest thing ever.
Okay.
Like, for the kill room, Twitchell had found a disused garage in one of Edmonton's bad neighborhoods and rented it from a couple who didn't speak English, so they weren't going to ask any questions about what was going on in there.
Okay.
But he still needed props, specifically the stun baton. So where else would he go for incapacitating weapons? But right here in America.
Woo!
Whoa.
So, you're welcome, Canada.
So he drove 7 hours to the border to buy one in Montana, but got stopped. For some stupid fucking reason, Mark Twitchell told the customs officer the same lie he told his wife. He said he was going to Montana to shoot a music video.
But guess what you need at the border
to
go work in another country?
A visa.
Visa.
Huh.
Yeah.
Mark Twitchell didn't have a visa. So they just said, like, okay, you got to go home. You're not coming into America.
Oh, my God. Well, then how is he ever going to bring back Milli Vanilli?
But there's a part of this, right, where this is where it gets dark.
Yeah.
Where... This kind of shit, this kind of empty facade he has, where he's believing his own lies within his own world. He's created this fake work life where he's already lying to his wife 24/7, and then he has to lie to her to shoot the movie. He has to lie to her to go get all the props. He has to do all this kind of shit, and then he's now starting to believe that it's real.
Right.
Almost, where he's spinning off into a world of fantasy.
He should have told the Border Patrol agent he's going to the gym. Because that would work. That's legal. You can do that anywhere.
You can do that anywhere. You can drive 7 hours from Edmonton to go to the gym in Bozeman.
Why not? Yeah. He's just...
Nothing says like having a secret gay relationship about that. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, he just ended up ordering one off of the internet from a guy that was willing to ship to Alberta, which he could have just done in the first place.
Yeah, buddy. It's fucking internet.
It's also not that big of a deal. It's a stun baton.
Yeah. As far as the samurai sword went, though, Mark Twitchell, not surprisingly, he already had one of those.
Okay, well, of course. That's kind of cool.
And he was so attached to it, in fact, that he wouldn't let anyone else touch it during the shoot between takes. It would actually yell at people if they handled it wrong.
Oh, yep. God.
According to the Devil Cinema, he would say, quote,
"Don't put your fingerprints on these. The oil on your hands could wreck it."
Oh,
like it's a baby bird.
Yeah, absolutely. The mother will never love it if you touch it. What a psycho.
And these poor actors, they were just looking for work.
Edmonton, can you imagine being an Edmonton actor?
Dude, one of the guys flew from Toronto on his own dime to be in this 7-minute short film. That was the killer.
And well, the thing was is that he had all of the pitch materials that he just had from pitching day players.
Right.
So he sent them all of this shit. Like, he basically sent them, like, look, I have a meeting with these people. Jeff Goldblum's going to be in our next movie. I'm going to guarantee you a spot in that movie if you can come and be in this movie. And so people that are just hungry for an opportunity, I mean, like, loneliness and desperation will lead you to do a lot of stuff. That's how I ended up on a fucking TV show getting sausage suspenders eaten off my body because I was desperate to make it in a business.
Well, that was a good $250 paycheck. You would go buy sausage yourself.
Never show them titties for free. That's what I learned a long time ago.
Absolutely. So these are just people who are struggling to get by.
Yeah.
He really is taking full advantage of their of their need for attention and acting.
Yeah, the victim was played by an amateur stand-up who was just trying to get into acting. He was just trying it out for a little bit. And he actually got it worst of all because he had to have duct tape ripped off his mouth over and over again because these dudes didn't know anything about practical effects.
Oh, my God.
And speaking of duct tape, Mark kept getting upset because the other guys were using too much.
That was what they were saying, is that he was very protective over his duct tape. He was kept saying, like, you're wasting it. You're wasting it.
That's a big part of their budget, I would assume, so that's important.
But still, they got through the shoot, and the whole thing got wrapped in a weekend. But the thing was, just doing this short film still wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Twitchell actually had an ulterior motive for the project. See, for Twitchell, House of Cards wasn't just a project to keep himself busy until the money started rolling in for day players. It was practice. The entire time, Twitchell had been planning to make House of Cards a reality.
Ooh.
It seemed like the fake reality of House of Cards just kind of overstepped his actual reality.
Right.
And that I don't know if it was, like, practice is a great way to put it, but I also wonder if it's more of a, I'm already doing the motions.
Mm-hmm.
This is me giving myself permission to do a thing I've been fantasizing about for a long time. And then I get to take my rage out on the world on this in this way that now I believe I have planned
right.
Perfectly.
I mean, honestly, it's what Alec Baldwin is currently doing with his impression of Donald Trump when he does seriously think he could run and win president. He thinks he could win the presidency. In his mind, it is all merging together as a possible reality.
Technically, what you'd call what Alec Baldwin's doing is called empty mugging.
It's horrible.
Well, less than a week after wrapping the House of Cards shoot, Mark Twitchell actually went through with it. But the thing was, married men like the victim in House of Cards were going to be missed pretty quickly.
Sure.
So Twitchell decided, fuck it. All he really cared about was just killing someone. So he chose single men instead.
But that's a huge plot twist. It's a key component.
Yeah.
They've got to be cheaters.
Yep. Nope.
Oh,
not at all. Because that's all he cared about. That's all he wanted to do. All he wanted to do was get the experience of killing a person.
Call up Joey Greco, have him find you a cheater, and then you can do this.
And the poor soul who happened to be on the other end of Mark Twitchell's fake Plenty of Fish account was a newcomer to Edmonton named Gilles Tétreau, who was just a genuinely nice dude who was having a hard time meeting new people.
Oh.
All he knew was that he'd gotten a message from a pretty blonde named Sheena who wanted to meet up for a date that night. Twitchell was, of course, on the other end and had chosen the oh-so-clever username Spiderwebs with two Z's.
So this is catfishing, right?
Yeah, this is catfishing.
Here. Oh,
and the way
God.
He put it too, even the way he chose the pictures for her, he was like, I wanted to find a picture of a woman that would be too irresistible not to fuck, but not too hot so they wouldn't dare question the reality of the scenario.
So this is what Twitchell wrote about this experience in SK Confessions after laying out why he chose lonely single men.
Such was the case with the man I will refer to as Frank. That, of course, is not his real name, and I won't divulge any other sensitive details about the situation, but Frank was my very first target ever. I roped him in with a profile I was quite proud of, featuring photos of a blonde I would like to bang myself.
Oh, my goodness. And this is before you could reverse image, right?
Yeah.
So he just found this online?
He went on Plenty of Fish. He just went to a different city.
See.
Yeah, he went to a different city and found a picture of a cute blonde girl in her mid-30s and used her.
Okay.
And it took 4 days of back and forth between Gilles and Sheena, played by Mark, before a date could actually be set. Since Twitchell, he'd been pretending to be a woman since the early 2000s.
Oh.
So he was actually pretty damn good at it. These guys were none the wiser.
He's very, very Dustin Hoffman from Tootsie.
So finally, on October 3rd, a Friday, Gilles was all set to pick up Sheena for dinner and a movie. Now, the reason why Twitchell had chosen Friday was because he told his wife that Friday was his therapy night because, not surprisingly, things weren't working out between Mark and his wife, Jess.
Not to malign therapy in any way, but if you have a therapy night, that's a lot. Like a full 6 to 10, you know, just a good 4-hour therapy session.
That's a big block of therapy.
That's a lot, like a whole night.
I understand it.
Let's see, Mark had found that upon the birth of his daughter, he still felt nothing. No emotions were coming in at all. And he felt himself getting more and more bored with family life. But the biggest reason why his marriage was falling apart was because of a girl named Tracy. Tracy was Mark Twitchell's college girlfriend, and the relationship had ended badly. But over the last year, while his wife was pregnant, Mark had reconnected with Tracy, and the two had since made out a couple of times.
It's kind of interesting. Well, I you very rarely see this anywhere. That somebody wants to punish the perpetrators of a crime. In a fictitious piece of movie, or maybe with like laws or something, of a thing that they are guilty of themselves. It's just weird about how like sometimes when someone's so anti one specific thing that they end up being the thing itself. It's strange.
Yeah, that's right. Canadian tongue hugging. That's what they were doing. Not good. Not what you want.
But Mark, he confessed to his wife and also threw in that he had no empathy or sympathy toward anyone in the entire world, by the way.
What was that last part, Mark? What was that last sociopathy part?
So I thought, I mean, they had a newborn, you know? She was determined to make it work, so she told him that if he stopped seeing Tracy and went to therapy, she'd give him another chance. He said yes to both conditions. But didn't do either. Kept seeing Tracy, and instead of going to therapy, Twitchell decided he's going to make Friday night his weekly murder night, starting on October 3rd. Now, Gilles Tétreau fully admits that he should have been suspicious when Sheena wouldn't give him a street address or phone number, and instead told him that he should drive down a back alley and park outside an old garage and walk through the garage to get to the back door.
Yeah, Sheena's never there. Sheena is never having you meet in a back alley. I just promise you that.
Never go. Never do this shit.
But
never do this. If they don't give you an exact address, if they don't give a phone number, do not go. Can I read a little bit of the message that Sheena sent him?
Yeah.
Just so you could see? Like, so a little bit of this message from Sheena, it's like both really convoluted, but he does sort of like nail a woman's voice a little bit, right? So it starts with, so, okay, Friday, if you're coming from the north on Groat, get on Calgary Trail when you get to the south side and jump on White Mud. Then go south on 50th Street, take a right on 40th Avenue, and after a block or two, take the very first right into the alley. It's marked by a yellow crosswalk sign, so pay attention. Then go left and pull into the only driveway on your left that isn't paved. LOL. Seriously, who ever heard of a driveway that looks like the Amazon? Whatever, it won't swallow your car, I promise. There's some garbage up against the fence, like an old couch and such, but it might be gone by Friday. Who knows? Like I said, the garage door will be open for you a touch, so don't worry about neighbors thinking you're a burglar. Everyone knows there's nothing valuable in there. Except my car, of course. Oi. See you then, Sheena.
Groat and White Mud? Are the Garbage Pail Kids naming these frickin' streets? So they're in Edmonton, and the streets are Groat and White Mud.
White Mud.
How is Seattle the suicide capital? This is the saddest town I've ever heard.
I mean, you know what, Matt? I kind of get it. I mean, I know what it's like. I'm sure, you know, a lot of you out there know what it's like. You know, there's a lot you'll brush off when you're new in town and you're lonely.
Of course, of course. I'm just saying.
That was a part of it, because when I was reading a lot about the victim, I do feel bad in terms of, like, being a lonely dude out there. It's like a part of the reason why I react to it is because I was that guy.
Yeah.
There was a period in time in my life where it's like if a hot chick I met online told me to do certain shit, I probably would have ended up doing it in a way, because I was kind of, especially in the new days, in the beginning of online dating,
right,
when I met an ex-con woman. At the very beginning of Match.com, when they would do the free weekends, and she was like, I'm out of jail soon. We should fuck. And right. I was just like, okay, you know, like, cool.
Well, that's
like, I don't know what I was doing.
I think you met on PrisonSmooch.com.
Yeah,
ooh, to play on PrisonHooch. And, of course, that is also why, if you search Henry Zebrowski, at some point they will be leaked. A lot of smiley faces right around his butthole. And those are going to be sort of images on there. So that's scary.
So, after getting the invitation, Gilles got in his car and headed off to the same garage where Mark Twitchell had just wrapped House of Cards days earlier.
This is crazy.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Twitchell, he'd been spending all day preparing. He'd soundproofed the walls, he'd covered every inch of the garage in plastic sheeting, just like Dexter did, and he even had a little dissecting table that had been made for the House of Cards shoot.
Hey, honey, it looks like the neighbor is starting a podcast. should we just call the police now or wait until we're really annoyed?
No, no, we'll wait till he starts yelling in there, and then I'll go over there with a shovel and I'll beat him to death.
Okay, sounds good.
And as Gilles was on his way, Mark logged into fucking Facebook on his Dexter Morgan profile and entered a status. This is what he wrote.
Dexter is patiently waiting for his next victim, play date, buddy.
And in response, one of his followers wrote,
do this well, Dex, and it could be really, really cool.
Oh my God.
Man, Facebook has not changed.
No, it hasn't.
It's got to go away.
Oh, my God. We talk about this on Top Hat this week. Mark Zuckerberg was considered to be the Democratic nominee for the primary. Can you imagine Mark Zuckerberg as president? Oh, my God. What a psycho.
Smoke these meats.
Smoke these meats.
Smoke these meats.
So at about 7 p.m., Gilles pulled his truck up to the garage, crouched under the half-open door, and walked through the dark to get to the other side. But before he could get there, out jumped Twitchell, wearing his stupid House of Cards hockey mask and holding his stun baton.
Twitchell is not that big of a guy.
No, not really.
This must have been kind of comical.
Well, he asked for the other guy to be small, too. He asked, because that's the one fucking thing about dating apps, is that they know you're, he got all his fucking measurements.
Right, okay.
So he knows
okay.
how big he is.
So Twitchell pressed the trigger and made a really impressive, like, arc of blue electricity shoot out of the end. But when he stuck it to Gilles' chest, didn't do anything. And Gilles, I mean, Gilles himself later said it was more annoying than painful. It was like, stop it. But
okay.
What neither of them knew was that stun batons, or at least the kind that Twitchell had ordered, didn't work that way. It's not just a pzzz and they fall to the ground. It's not a taser because there's no actual pain involved. What a stun baton actually does is pump 800,000 volts of electricity into the body. But it's not voltage that paralyzes a person and sends them to the ground shaken. They don't use volts in the electric chair.
Hmm.
They use watts.
Ooh.
What?
that's come fun. On,
see, voltage actually pumps itself through the body, making the muscles work overtime and converting blood sugar into lactic acid. And eventually, your muscles just stop working. But in the case of Gilles and Twitchell, it was not an instantaneous effect, because Gilles just pushed the baton away and started to run. But Twitchell had another trick up his sleeve. He had a gun.
Ooh.
But gun wasn't real. It was just a movie prop that he'd rented from a production house.
Okay.
But Gilles, he didn't know that, so he did what he was told and he got on the ground. But after Twitchell put tape over Gilles' eyes, something just kind of switched in Gilles' brain.
He said, I'm not going out. I'm not going out like that. He started screaming that while on the floor.
Good for
and
him.
And stood up.
Yeah.
Good for him. All right.
Yeah, ripped the tape off of his eyes. He said if he was going to die that night, he was going to die his way.
There it is. Now we got
and
ourselves
so
a real strong Edmonton
like,
man.
Get down on the ground. Get down on the ground. Hands behind your back. And he's like, I'm not going out that way. And Gilles realized, he was like, whatever's happening, I'm grabbing that gun. He took a hold of the gun. And all this came from the one that got away. And he was like, oh, shit, it's plastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. It's a fucking plastic gun. So he starts punching Twitchell in the face. The two of them punching back and forth. Meanwhile, he starts bending the plastic gun back to Twitchell screaming, you're going to break it.
Oh, my God.
You're going to break it.
Woo. What a douchebag.
He's got to get his deposit back.
Of course. Yeah, naturally. All
and,
right.
Yeah, and you know, Gilles, he said when he felt that plastic gun, he said it was the best feeling he'd ever had in his life.
He's a hero.
Yeah, they started grappling, and Gilles, he was actually able to kind of shimmy his way out of there because Twitchell was grabbing a hold of his jacket.
Mm-hmm.
So Gilles, he just kind of shimmied out of his jacket and was able to roll under the still open garage door.
Yeah, that's how John Candy got control of the wheel in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles again. After
Well, he realized he got him to grab a hold of the jacket, then he slipped out of the jacket.
Right.
It's a good move.
Slip out, yeah.
Yeah, and as Twitchell later recounted in SK Confessions, quote,
he made it to the driveway, and that's when I knew I was pooched.
What was that? What does that mean? You're half dog? What happened?
But Gilles almost didn't make it. When he tried to stand up and run after getting out of the garage, he found that he couldn't because the stun baton had finally done its job.
Oh.
So Twitchell caught up and started dragging Gilles back in. But when Twitchell let go for a second to raise the garage door, Gilles' strength returned and he took off running.
All right.
As when he's first crawling out, a couple of people walk past and he was like, help me, get in my truck. And the woman of the couple, which I found is interesting, wouldn't let the man come forward to help him because she's like, we can't get involved. But the bit was Twitchell, when he saw the couple, and he's in a fucking mask and a hoodie with a fake gun in his hands, and he starts, he freezes, and he goes, all right, quit playing now. This is my best friend, and we're having a bit of a romp around time. Come on, buddy, get up. He tried to pretend like they were just friends having, like, gay garage night.
I guess so. Okay.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, as soon as Twitchell came out and started going like, oh hey friend, the couple fucking bolted. But so
not a hero duo
no. Because they thought that Gilles and Twitchell were in cahoots and the whole thing was a ruse to rob them.
I might just say this, overthinking it a little bit.
Yeah. But when they ran, so did Twitchell. So Gilles was able to get up, dust himself off, and make his way back to his truck.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, man. And when he got back to the garage, he said that he could still see Twitchell's feet under the open door, pacing back and forth. But still, Gilles managed to get in his vehicle, start the engine, and escape.
Okay.
But instead of going to the police, Gilles, horribly embarrassed about the whole situation, which is totally understandable, went home and passed out from the adrenaline crash. And when he woke up and checked his plentyoffish.com account, Sheena was gone.
That's so sad. It's so heartbreaking. You want to go, you're thinking you're finding it, because that's what he said to himself, is that when he found her profile, he's like, yeah, a lot of people said that, you know, it was maybe dumb what I did, but I said to myself, you got to give love a chance.
You got to give love a chance in a public setting where there's folks around for your first meeting.
Maybe exchange you have an exit pictures.
Maybe you do lunch instead of dinner,
yeah,
you know,
lunch.
So that you can get out because you got stuff to do at 5, you know.
Go out to lunch.
Sure.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with internet relationships, things starting on the internet. You guys are cross. But you got to Skype.
Yeah.
Do a Skype.
You got to see the voice attached to a face and you have to be like, no offense here, Sheena, but I'm going to need you to hold up a newspaper. I just need you to hold up a newspaper so I can see what date it is.
Right.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is that when Gilles checked the account when he first got home, he would have found a message from Mark saying that he was going to hunt him down if he ever talked to the police. But when Twitchell deleted Sheena, deleted all the messages too.
Yeah. Didn't even get the
fucking
the shallow threat. Yeah. Okay.
So Gilles never saw it. And then that is where we're going to end this episode. And we'll come back with the murder of Johnny Altinger next week when Twitchell is actually somehow successful.
Mark Twitchell. This is really fascinating story. And it's one of the stories that is so current in pop culture. It's really fascinating.
Man, it just... We talk time and time again about the power of nerds and what happens. Because, you know, we had a good time kind of joking about the lead up to this first thing and this kind of thing going wrong. But it's very interesting to see how easy the decision it was for him.
Right.
To do this, to try to commit murder. Because they were saying, like, when he was writing House of Cards, he said that he researched traits of psychopaths. And it's a weird thing about the chicken and the egg of people that end up identifying as psychopaths or people who are diagnosed as psychopaths. It's almost like it's psychopathic to look at the symptoms of that disorder and say, oh, that's me. I want those attributes.
Yes. If you see someone looking at the psychopath test and you hear them saying, check, 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 that is not someone to be trusted.
Yeah.
Because it's weird, right? Because in a way, I always kind of trick, because we talk about this all the time in terms of, like, people play their own games with themselves, where in down deep, you maybe know that there's something empty with you, but you, you know, you just assume you're normal like everybody else. But as soon as something gives you permission to be crazy, there's something, there's like a feedback loop inside of his own mind where he saw all of this shit about being a psychopath. And he's like, that gives me my fucking get out of jail free card no matter what.
Interesting. And if you are an actor out there, unless you see Jeff Goldblum, he's not in the movie. And if you have to go to Edmonton and the budget is $90,000, he's not in the movie.
Jeff Goldblum will say a lot of shit after one of his jazz shows in L.A. He will respond to emails, especially if you're sending him an email as Sheena. He will respond to you because he's Jeff Goldblum, but do not believe he will be in your film until he shows up on set.
Absolutely.
The day that he's supposed to arrive, or at least gets to the airport, because then it's a whole thing. But I ask a message to filmmakers out there that don't let this man's tale dissuade you.
No.
From trying to make your art. You got to keep pushing, man. You got to fight for that inch.
Right. Well, I hope it dissuades you from being a serial killer.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I think it should. Yeah. I think it should.
That's for sure. Well, speaking of movies, we want to thank Fangoria. We had a great chance to be, we were on the cover. Our name was on the cover.
A huge fucking dream.
It was awesome.
Our name was on the cover next to Tom Savini. It was
and
Joe
Bob,
so cool.
And Joe Bob Briggs was on the cover. In the they gave him the picture, of course, because Joe Bob's a legend.
Yeah, Monster Vision, man.
Of course. So check out the new Fangoria. It's a little bit pricey, but the thing is, you can't get the content online, and it's high quality.
Great quality.
It's great quality. So check out the new Fangoria, and we'll be doing a signing. What is it, the 19th?
A 17th.
We'll be doing a signing January 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. At Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, over in Union Square.
Yes.
It'll be me and Ben.
Yes,
Henry can't make it, but it'll be the two of us. Us New York boys are coming.
Yes.
Yeah, the New Yorkers are going there. But honestly, the first issue of the Fangoria, the new run, was fucking fantastic.
So good.
So
it's
good.
Thick as shit.
Yep.
You could beat a cat to death with it if you want to. I'm not saying you should.
Don't do it. You can also make a nice bed for your turtle.
What?
I don't.
You ever seen a turtle?
You know how
turtles live?
I'm not sure.
I tell you what, this is one of these stories. We're going to be doing a lot more of these more specific true crime stories, I think, in 2019, because we love a good story.
Yeah.
And I like telling a good story. And you know, we'll give you blood, we'll give you guts, but part of it is good ass, dumb shit characters like Mark Twitchell,
yep,
who I hope is hearing this in jail, and I hope it makes him scowl.
Absolutely. I'm sure that he will. The thing that will upset him the most is us criticizing his art.
Yeah.
Because it's crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people who do great fan fiction films, or YouTube, basically, because you can't profit off of it.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a disgrace to the whole community.
Yeah, I wonder if he's listening from Saskatchewan prison.
Oh.
Saskatchewan. Yeah, do you guys remember that video where they put together all of the fan bits? It was all at a bar, and it was like Terminator and Star Wars and all the stuff. It was a huge, like 7 minutes long, it's like a music video.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
Yep.
I want to quickly thank someone sent me a copy of this DVD called Megiddo, the Omega Code 2. I don't know who you are, but I can't wait to see this. I don't know what the fuck this is. And I also want to thank Amanda Rizzi for all the pictures of Plainfield and of Ed Gein's father's grave.
Oh, nice.
Okay, very
nice. And the alien, it's the butt-ripping alien jerky that she sent me, which I'm afraid to eat. But thank you.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And again, thanks to everyone who has bought our specials so far. $6.66. Don't forget to type in those three wonderful letters from 2001.
www.lazpodcastlive.com.
Check it out. And thank you for the great response. And that'll be there for the whole year. It'll be the gift that keeps on giving.
And you give to our Patreon. Yeah, if you want to give us some money, you can give to our Patreon as well.
Yes, thank you all so much. And the last stream is back. AdultSwim.com/streams every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's always a great experience and a great time to hang out with friends. And it's so fun to have that evening with you. It's better than going out and planning a murder.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You're right.
Yeah.
If that's the bar. It is.
All right, everyone. LPN. What's our Twitter? LPN? Something like that?
It's at LPontheleft.com.
Okay.
It's all this. No, at LPontheleft is for all our bullshit.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail me.
Magoostalations.
2019's gonna be different than the other years, that's for certain.